Kötü başını haberini dikeceğim. Namı çağırıyor şu lahir az takır dikeceğim. Benim şu kahve şu kışın teytanı yapabın için anda şiir öğretik adal her şey vasıdı gore baktı ben dikeceğim. Şu şiir rada kışına gol gopin aşağı mı rada kundi gidi gavardan dikeceğim. Vrindavan dhamma ki jai, Mathura dhamma ki jai, Navadvipa Mayapur dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaura Purnamandev. All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Dinamani Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Patrani Nirvase Sisunyavadi Paskachyade Satarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Shcha Sri Rupam Sahagrita Tam Sahagana Ravana Kambitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsha Panchakalpa Chupasthaki Pasindabhiva Tapati Tanam Pamanevya Vaishnavevya Namo Maha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 27, which is Understanding Material Nature, Text 11. And this is on November 27th, 2017, a Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Muktalingam sarabhasam asati pratipadyate sato bandhum asach chakshu sarnvamu syutam advayam. Muktalingam, transcendental. Sat abhasam, manifest as a reflection. Asati, in the false ego. Pratipadyate, he realizes. Sata bandhum, the support of the material cause. Asat chakshu, the eye, revealer of the illusory energy. Sarva anushyutam, entered into everything. Advayam, without a second. Srila Prabhupada's translation. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality of Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection, even in false ego. He is the supporter of the material cause and he enters into everything. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eyes of the illusory energy. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A pure devotee can see the presence of the supreme personality of Godhead in everything materially manifested. He is present there only as a reflection, but a pure devotee can realize that in the darkness of material illusion, the only light is the Supreme Lord, who is its support. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that the background of the material manifestation is Lord Krishna, and is confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the Supreme Lord, by his partial or plenary expansion, is present not only within the universe and each and every universe, but in every atom, although he is one without a second. The word avayam, without a second, which is used in this verse, indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is represented in everything, including the atoms, he is not divided. His presence in everything is explained in the next verse. Muktalingam sarabhasam asati pratipadyate sato bandhum asakshachu sarvanushyutamadvayam. A liberated soul realizes the absolute personality of Godhead, who is transcendental and who is manifest as a reflection even in false ego. He is the support of the material cause and he enters into everything. He is absolute, one without a second, and he is the eyes of the illusionary energy. So I have a little bit of a cold and a hoarse throat. I hope I can speak loud enough for you to hear me. And my voice sounds a little froggish. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on this verse, it says that this verse gives us five ways of understanding the Lord prior to realization. Understanding the Lord through the Shastra, through philosophy, through intelligence, before we're actually able to see the Lord face to face. And such is very important to us, because on the one hand, until we've actually seen the Lord, until we have personal realization, prakshakshad agamam dharmam, we're not able to understand things as they are. We talk about the guru is tatvadarshinah. One is actually able to see the truth, and the ultimate proof for each of us is to be able to see the truth directly. But how do we get to the point of seeing the truth? You know, until you can see the truth, you have to know something of the truth from authority, from logic, from reason. It's something like, until you actually go to a place, how do you know about that place? But how will you get to that place unless you hear something about that place from authority? Without hearing something about that place, you'll have no desire to get there, nor will you know the way to get there. So of course we could say that some initial desire in the soul has to be present in order even to have the interest in hearing from the devotees, in hearing from the Shastra. So some initial desire is there in the soul from who knows what, from Agyata Sukriti or from some sort of causeless mercy. Agyata Sukriti also involves causeless mercy. In some way, there's some desire of the soul that starts this process. However, that desire has to be fanned. It has to be encouraged by the Shastra and by the devotees. Otherwise, it's not enough. And again, not only does the desire have to be strong enough, but also the path has to be clear. And therefore, we need some knowledge of the Lord before we have full realization. Otherwise, it just won't be possible. I mean, it's if we think of it in terms of even some, you know, completely mundane thing. You know, if you want to learn how to be a gymnast, a ballet dancer, a violinist, or anything in the world, then before you've experienced what it's like, I mean, you could hear other people playing the violin, but before you've experienced it, you have to have some desire, and then you have to have some help from somebody who's already experienced. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur tells us that this verse outlines five ways we can know the Lord on the platform of logic and reason and our ordinary mundane experience. And I know I speak on this topic a lot, and I speak on this topic a lot because the Shastra speaks on this topic a lot. The Lord speaks on this topic a lot. It's such an important topic. How can we realize the Lord within our everyday experience through the eyes of the Shastra? How can the Shastra change the way we interpret our experience? Right, there was the old radio Ram that one of our God brothers did, some radio shows, and he was talking about the idea of the creation happening from nothing, you know, without any cause. And he had a little skit called Primordial Soup. You know, you go into a restaurant and you place an order, and they said, okay, well, we have primordial soup on the menu. And they said, well, who makes it? Oh, nobody makes it. It just appears here every morning. So, you know, that's ridiculous. You're not going to just have it appear there. I saw a really funny skit of this husband and wife. So the wife says to the husband, my dear husband, I'm just so overworked. You know, I have a full-time job, and then I have to do all the cooking, and I have to clean all the dishes, and I have to do all the laundry, and I have to clean the house, and I'm just really overworked. And the man says to his wife, I don't know why you're stressing so much. He says, this house is full of magic. She says, well, what do you mean? He says, well, I find if I just put my dirty clothes here, the next day they're all cleaned and folded. And he says, and there's this table here in the living room. No matter how much mess I put on it, the next day it's clean. He said, I've even experimented by putting a large amount of mess here, and somehow or other it's clean. I leave my bed a mess in the morning, and, you know, when I come back from work, it's been made. He said, you know, there's some kind of magic in this house. You really don't need to stress about everything. Everything's just done for you. And so she goes off in a huff and in a fury, and she leaves him. So it's something like that. You know, we're looking at the world, and we're thinking, you know, everything is just created automatically. Everything is just here by some sort of, just sort of appears here. And we don't see the hand of the Lord. So it's easy to go through life, a lot of people do, to go through life thinking that everything is just chance, everything just appears here. You know, we just don't know where it comes from, here it is, let's just use it. And the Shastra teaches us how to go through life so that we have the same experiences as somebody who's going through life in that way, except that we interpret our experiences differently. You know, if that husband had interpreted, oh, my wife, even though she's working so hard, she's doing all the laundry, she's cleaning the table, she's making the bed. If he interpreted those same experiences differently, then he would have had a different relationship, and then he would, only then would he have been able to get to know his wife. Okay, so the five areas that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives us, one is shining in the temporary world as Antaryami. The next is the Lord of all causes. The next is that he reveals the effects. The next is that he is full in all effects and causes. And the last is that he is the non-dual person. So the first, that he is shining in the world as the Antaryami. So, of course, this is given as a reflection. Sat Abhasam. We're familiar with this word Abhasa, I'm sure, in terms of Nam Abhas. We talk about Nam Aparad, Nam Abhas, and Shudanam. Abhas is a reflection. Sometimes it's called a shadow. Rupa Goswami talks about Bhav Abhas also, that there can be a shadow or a reflection of the real thing. In one sense, all of the light within this material universe is understood to be a little reflection of the Brahma-jyoti. So the sun that's illuminating the universe is just a reflection of the Brahma-jyoti illuminating the spiritual world. But interestingly enough, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that the shining of the Lord in this temporary world is as the Antaryami. Antar means within, Yami means the controller. So this inner controller, of course, is what we, Srila Prabhupada normally calls the super soul, Param Atma, the supreme self, the overlord self. So there's a number of ways in which this super self is manifested. Super self, of course, is also Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. Kshiradakshaya Vishnu is lying on the ocean of milk in Swetadvip, the white planet within this universe. And he is the soul of the universe. Right? Queen Kunti prays like that. She says, O soul of the universe. The universe is understood in the Bhagavatam, as the whole chapter is dedicated to this topic, that the universe is really an organic being. The universe is not a machine. So throughout human history, the universe has generally been understood as an organic being, as has the individual planets. And recently within history, some scientists, have started talking about the universe as just some sort of machine. But no, the universe is a body. And one could say that the universal form of the Lord Prabhupada sometimes calls it imaginary. However, it is really the body of the Lord. It is the body of the Lord, and the Lord is present as the soul of that body in the form of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. And although he is not divided, which Prabhupada mentions in this purport, although he is not divided, still he has a presence in every atom and in everyone's heart. So how is that? Why don't we think about our own body? So if we think about our own body, we, the soul of the body, are situated in the heart of this body. Of course, it's not that we're all dirty by the blood going through the heart or something like that. It's more situated in the heart in a subtle way, and the heart chakra. Even then, we're not really affected by the subtle prana and so forth. But anyway, we're in the heart of the body, and because we're in the heart, it's said that consciousness is distributed through the blood, that the consciousness of the soul in the heart is distributed through blood, through the nervous system, and we are therefore conscious, in some way, of every atom and every cell in our body. We have some degree of consciousness of it. Therefore, we can feel pain even in our internal organs. Of course, sometimes we may have some disease growing in us of which we're not immediately conscious, has to be seen by some sort of diagnostic test. But we have some awareness of all of the atoms and cells in our body, although we're situated in one place. We're situated only in the heart. Yet we can feel our toes, right? If we write now, normally we don't give them much attention. But if we put our attention to our toes, we immediately are aware of their position, proprioceptive awareness. We are aware of what they are touching. Maybe we have some socks on them, or the floor is touching them, or a chair is touching them. So we're able to have that awareness. If we put our awareness to our stomach and intestines, our digestive system, then we can have some internal awareness. How does that feel? We can have some awareness of our lungs. Right? How are our lungs breathing? We have some awareness of our eyes. Are they moist? And so forth. We have some awareness of the inside of our nose and inside of our mouth. So we have awareness of the different parts of our body, although we are not divided. It's not that we are divided. When you say that our consciousness is in every atom and in every cell of the body, it doesn't mean that there's millions of us broken up into the cells. So in a similar way, the Supreme Lord is the Antaryami. He is the controller and the knower of everything in the universe. He is the one soul who is aware of everything that's going on in the universe. And each of us is like a little cell in the universal body, and we are each a cell in some kind of system of the body. For example, those who are in the field of artistry, and their occupation is in the field of artistry, who provide all the functions and beauty in the universe, which in Sanskrit is called the Shudras. So those persons are considered to be the legs of the universal body. You could say they're a part of the muscular skeletal structure of the body. And then you have those who are working in the field of resources, who are taking the natural resources and making them into something that's, they're creating prosperity for the universal body. So those people are compared, that's of course we call that the varna of the vaishyas, and those people are compared to the digestive system. The digestive system takes food and it turns it into nutrition. So those in the field of resources, they take land, they take cows, they take water, they take sheep, and they turn that into food and clothing and medicine and so forth, which is then they distribute throughout society. And then you have those working as protectors in the field of government, so that they can be governing a small apartment building as a landlord, or they can be governing a city or a whole country. And these are the people who are providing. They're taking the resources from those in the field of resources, and they're taking the work from those in the field of artistry who provide beauty and function, and they're distributing that throughout the society in terms of giving care and protection. They are the ones making sure that everything is taken care of, that people get what they need in terms of food and water and clothing, recreation, education, medical care, military care, and all of that kind of thing. And they could be compared to the circulatory system of the body and the arms of the body, of the universal body. And then there are those in the field of ideas. So those in the field of ideas provide the wisdom and the guidance for society. They are the teachers of society, the priests, the writers, the speakers and so forth. They're advising people in all of the other fields, and they provide the guidance for the society. So those people could be compared to the throat for speaking, and to the head, basically to the nervous system, and particularly to the knowledge acquiring senses. Those in the field of artistry are compared to the working senses. So in this way, each of us is part, we are each like a cell in some system of the body. Just like, you know, we have cells in our own digestive system, we have cells in our own musculoskeletal system, we have cells in our own circulatory system, we have cells in our own nervous system. So we are each a cell in some system of the universal body. And then there is the, although we are working for our own interests, generally speaking, I mean, each cell in my stomach is working for its own digestion. But still, that cell is also working for my interest. So each of us is also working for the interest of the Antaryami. We may do that consciously or unconsciously. So generally, in my body, I would assume that the cells of my body are not aware that they are serving me. I would assume that they're only aware of their own interests. In a similar way, most entities within the universe are also only aware of their own interests. And the system of, especially Varna Dharma, is to help people understand that they have an interest beyond their own personal interest. They have a role in human society in general, in the planet in general, and in the universe in general. And this interest is done not only by doing one's part in Varna, but by doing one's part for the interest of the soul of the universe. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that this Antaryami is shining, even though it's a reflection. Prabhupada says, one can realize in the darkness of material illusion the only light is the Supreme Lord. So once one starts to do one's activities for the pleasure of the soul of the universe, one starts to see things as they are. One starts to actually understand the bigger picture. One starts to see things in the right perspective. And when one sees things in the right perspective, one can make good decisions, as we've talked about many times. And because we are all cells in the universal body, the soul of the universal body desires to guide us in such a way for our own happiness. Our happiness and the happiness of the soul of the universal body are really the same. You know, all my little cells in my body will be happy if I'm happy. If I'm healthy, all my bodily cells will be happy, will be healthy and happy. So this is not, to have a separate interest is absurd. You know, once a cell starts having its separate interest, it becomes cancerous. So as soon as we have a separate interest, then we become a disease within the universal body. So then the Lord of all causes, the Lord of all causes, so if the whole universe is the body of the Lord and the Lord is the soul, then everything that happens must be the will of that universal soul. There can't be anything that happens outside of his will. And one could say, well, there's a lot of things that happen that don't seem very nice. So that's a fact. We cannot say that it's necessarily his ultimate will, but still the Lord understands that the rebellious living entities, they need some room for their rebellion. So although it's not Krishna's ultimate will that souls stay in a state of rebellion, it is his will that everyone gets to exercise their free will and that they come to him out of voluntarily love and surrender rather than out of force. And there's no way that the Lord is going to force any of his parts and parcels. He could, you could say, but it's against the basic element of it, the basic nature of his very existence. His very existence is voluntary love, not force. So he is the Lord of all causes. There's nothing that has no cause. Sarva karana karanam. He's the cause of all causes. Any kind of theory of creation or cause always gets to a point where there's an original cause. You know, if you want to talk about some mechanistic cause of the universe, you talk about the Big Bang, then you have to say, well, where did the elements come from that banged? You know, where did the stuff come from that exploded? And what caused it to explode? You get to a point, some scientists say, yeah, okay, give me one miracle and then I can explain everything. So the one miracle is, where did everything come from in the first place? What was the original cause? So we're saying the original cause is a person, which tallies with our experience. If we're not able to see and ascertain the original cause through our senses, then through logic. Science is meant to be based on observation and logic. Well, our observation is everything for which we can ascertain a cause has a personality behind it. There are things for which we can't ascertain a cause. We can't see the cause. But everything for which we can see a cause has some intelligence behind it. So it is logical to conclude that those things for which we cannot see a cause also have some intelligence behind it, although we cannot perceive it. After all, even in our daily lives, we're not able to perceive the cause behind things even that we know are made by a human being. Right? Like if you look at the clothing you're wearing right now, so you may not have met the people who are the cause of that clothing. And how many people are involved in that clothing? Somebody is selling it, somebody is transporting it, someone is weaving it, someone is dyeing it, someone is spinning the thread, somebody is harvesting the fibers, somebody is planting the fibers, and so forth. But you may not have met any of those people. You may not know any of them. Still, one can understand by looking at one's clothing that this has a human cause. So in a similar way, we can look at things where we do not know the personal cause, and we can understand there must be a personal cause, and then reveals the effects. I thought this was particularly interesting. What does this mean, to reveal the effects? So Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that Krishna knows the future, and he was saying, but anybody can know the future. He said Krishna knows the future in this sense, that he knows the effects of what we are doing. And what this means quite simply is that one can understand that if somebody is driving on a certain path to a certain destination, that that's the destination they'll achieve. They're not going to achieve a different destination. If you're taking a plane to New York, you're not going to end up in Tokyo. And you can say the plane could be diverted and so many things, but one can understand that this is the effect. One can understand, you know, if you do your studies and you go to school and you take the exams, then you will get a good grade and you will pass the exams. That's understanding the effects. And anybody can understand the effects. So in the scripture, we're given what are the causes and what are the effects. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna details, in at least in a summary way, what are the effects of the three modes of material nature. So he goes through how to ascertain what mode one is in. You can tell what mode you're in by who you worship, by what food you eat, by how you give charity, by what kind of religious functions you perform, by how you understand things, by what knowledge you have, and so forth. You can look at your life in all of these areas and understand what modes of nature you're in. And then he gives what's the effect. You know, mode of ignorance results in foolishness. It results in birth in the lower planets or in animal species or in very degraded human situations. The mode of passion will result in mixed happiness and distress and birth in a human body. If you're in pure mode of passion, you'll take birth as a king or as a very rich person. And the mode of goodness will give you unadulterated, basically, that means material, but basically unadulterated happiness and wisdom and insight. And you'll take birth either as a very high-class human being, like a philosopher or a poet, or you'll take birth on the higher planets. And he says that one who does bhakti, does bhakti will have understanding and realization beyond the mode of goodness. One will be filled with joy, brahma bhuta prasanatma, nisochatina kanchati. One will also attain to Krishna's eternal abode. So Krishna tells us these are the causes, the three modes of material nature and transcendence, four causes, and these are the different effects. So he reveals these effects. And to one who studies the scripture, one can understand these things. I mean, I'm sure we've all found that by studying the scripture, we've been able to look at the world and see, oh, that's how these things are working. That's why these things are happening the way that they're happening. You know, people who simply go on their own sense perception and their own logic without reference to the scriptures, they're trying to understand, you know, what causes this and what causes that. And their Prabhupada would talk about the planning commissions. One would think Prabhupada must have had a lot of experience with planning commissions in his life. The planning commissions, they make all these different plans. And, you know, they don't work out very well. They cause some other difficulty. So I've given so many examples of this kind of thing. Like a lot of the plans being done today for including people with disabilities, for example. We gave the example of an example many times. So in the United States, there was a law passed that doctors have to provide a sign language interpreter for deaf patients. So that's a great law, right? Who would argue with that? The government should provide sign language interpreters for deaf patients. Absolutely. But there was no financing given for it. So the doctors had to provide the interpreters with their own money. And sign language interpreters are expensive. So what they ended up doing was, if they could understand a person was hearing impaired, they simply wouldn't give them an appointment. And so people who were hearing impaired or deaf, they had a much more difficult time seeing a doctor at all. So that was the unintended consequence. So people in the world, they often cannot see the effect of their cause. They're thinking, okay, this is very simple, this is the problem, and if we do this, there'll be the solution. And I'm sure we found this in our own lives. In our own lives, we think, okay, I have this particular problem, and this is the cause of my problem, and if I do this and this and this, then I'll have this result, and we do that, and we find we don't get the results we expected. As Prahlad Maharaj says, that the cure is often worse than the disease. You know, at least before sign language interpreters, hearing impaired people got to see a doctor, now they don't even get to see one. So this is the situation. And the Lord actually reveals the effects through the Shastra. And the next one mentioned is that he's full in all effects and causes. So he's there, everything. Every cause, every effect is part of him. It's included in him. As the whole universe is his body, everything that happens, every effect, it's all contained within him. In fact, the very definition of illusion is to see anything separate from the Lord. Okay? Krishna says that anything that appears to be a value, if it was without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. To see something without relation to the Lord. So it's really interesting just that we're not the only ones who will define understanding like that. So in one book that I'm reading at the present time about addiction and grace, and I decided to read this because Srila Prabhupada defines our material attachments many times as addictions. He often uses that word, addiction. And this author is a psychologist or psychiatrist, I can't remember which. And he's also a theological writer. Anyway, he's looking at all different religions, different branches of Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, etc. And he concludes, all major religions deal centrally with these themes. We are created for love and freedom, addiction hinders us, and grace is necessary for salvation. So to understand that, right? And why? And this is, again, he says, nothing God says must be more important to you than I am. I am the ultimate value by whom the value of all other things must be measured and in whom true love for all other things must be found. And I thought, wow, that's really just a restatement of this Chatur Sloki, right? I mean, this is a Christian, basically Christian theologian, and he's writing this. Nothing God says must be more important to you than I am. I am the ultimate value by whom the value of all other things must be measured and in whom true love for all other things must be found. And that's exactly what Krishna is saying. Right? Anything that appears to be a value, if you don't see the relationship to me, it has no reality. It is just a reflection that appears to be in darkness. Now you could say, well, wait a minute. I mean, like here it says that Krishna is that reflection in the darkness. So how is it that Krishna is saying in the second canto that Maya is the reflection which appears to be in darkness? Here in the third canto is Lord Kapiladev. He's saying that the absolute personality of Godhead, the Muktalingam, the transcendental form, is Sat Abhyasa. Asati. Asati is in the Asat. In the temporary, appears as a reflection. Well, the understanding of this is that the Lord appears only as a reflection in the darkness to those who are in illusion. As Srila Prabhupada says, although he's present only as a reflection, pure devotees can realize the only light is the Supreme Lord. So for those who are conditioned, one sees the Lord here only as his reflection, only as the illusory energy. But to one who is Krishna conscious, they see, no, wait a minute. It's not just the illusory energy. Reflection means that there must be actual light. And the light is there in the Lord as the Supreme Soul, as the shining, as we said, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse, as the shining of the Antaryami. So everything is contained, all causes and effects. even if I'm seemingly acting completely independently. I'm not. My so-called acting of independently my so-called something that's separate from the Lord is simply due to an illusion. And that illusory energy, Daiviyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Dharachiya, that illusory energy is also the energy of the Lord. So even my ability to be illusioned is the cause and effect of the Lord. Matasmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Apohanam Cha. Even when I'm forgetting the Lord, whether I'm forgetting the Lord intentionally, someone who takes an intoxicant, you know, or does some activity to try to forget the Lord, or whether I'm forgetful of the Lord just because I'm kind of walking around in ignorance, that ability to forget the Lord is also the energy of the Lord. So the Lord is present in that forgetfulness, the ability to see the reflection as simply a reflection and not see the original light is also the Lord. And the final way in which Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur says we can know the Lord previous to realization is that He is non-dual. He is not divided. Now, this concept of the Lord as Advaita, or here, Advayam, without a second, is something that, in one sense, we don't focus on in our modern Gaudiya Vaishnava Sangha. And the reason that our Sanghas focus on the difference rather than the oneness is as a response to the preaching of Buddha and Sankaracharya. So we find that our Shastra, our Srimad Bhagavatam particularly, does give emphasis both to the oneness and to the difference. It doesn't give emphasis only to the difference. In fact, there are so many verses that speak about the oneness, that everything is one, the non-dual nature, that you could see that an impersonalist might be bewildered by the Bhagavatam and might not understand it correctly, even though there's also so many descriptions of the Lord as a transcendent being through all of His incarnations and so forth. And we focus, as I said, primarily as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, as followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we focus primarily on the difference. And as I said, this is mostly a response to the preaching Nirvaseshas and Nirvadi Paskatya Deshacharane, as we say in our pranam prayer for Srila Prabhupada. It's mostly a response to the preaching of Buddha and Sankaracharya, which, while having utilization and benefit for the world at that time and place for those people, ultimately is harmful. In fact, the religion of just seeing that everyone's God and everything's one is a religion of the demons. I found it interesting in Sadapuja's book, Alien Identities, which has just recently been reprinted, that he found that when there were demoniac entities with whom people had contact on this earth, that those demoniac entities were all preaching Mayavada philosophy. And he said he found this very astonishing. But the demons also have a religion. After all, Mayavada philosophy makes all the demons God, right? So that would be a very nice religion for the demons. At the same time, there is a oneness. If there wasn't a oneness, we wouldn't be able to engage everything in Krishna's service because it would all be separate from Him. As soon as you don't have a oneness, then the world becomes something evil, and that you know, you have to just renounce the world and be a recluse, and be an ascetic person separate from the world. And I would say that there are many members of the Hare Krishna movement in all of the different sanghas who believe this more or less. So we find a recurring and pervasive belief that the best way to be spiritual is to be in a renounced order, to not engage in the world, to be separate from the world, go to a holy place, just simply chant and hear and preach. And anything other than that is some sort of a compromise. And this kind of mood is a world-negating mood. This kind of mood is very much a dualistic mood. That the Lord is separate, spirituality is separate. The world is evil, the world is material, the world is entangling, the world is illusion. We have to get away from the world. Now, it is true that when one is in family life and one has a job, that the responsibilities of that life are often overwhelming. That is definitely true. I mean, even if you're living alone, if you have your own house to maintain, you know, you have a mortgage to pay, you have to fix the plumbing, you have to fix the lights, you have to take care of the car, you have to change the oil, you have to get gas in the car, you have to make payments on the car, you have to maintain the grounds, and you know, and then you have to shop, and you have to cook, and you have to go to work. And just doing all of those things every day, you have to pay the bills, can take up so much of one's time and energy that there's very little time left for direct sadhana. And people in those situations, you know, if they have time to chant their 16 rounds and three Gayatris every day and do some basic puja for their deities, then they count themselves as very fortunate. And often people feel that they're just struggling just to do some kind of sadhana every day. And they're thinking, oh, when can I give up this life of entanglement and just take to the life of renunciation? But the difficulty is that the Lord actually wants not only renunciates, but also wants people working in the world. Again, each of the varnas is part of the universal body of the Lord. And as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Gopinath Patanayaka and all the children of Bhavananda Roy, he said, I want my devotees in responsible positions in the world. I don't want everyone to be a renunciate, but you just have to do it properly. So therefore, there's so much emphasis in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita as to how to be conscious of Krishna in the world. It's not just there because we have to start there, but it's there because we are meant, most of us are meant to spend a large portion of our lives, at least one-fourth of our lives, working in the world. And which fourth of our lives? The fourth of our lives we're expected to work in the world is the fourth of our lives where we have the most energy, the most enthusiasm, the most health, and so forth, where we're just bursting with such things. And in order to do that, we have to see a kind of oneness. We have to see, I'm part of the body of the Lord. Not only I, but everything around me. I mean, if each of us can look around at our environment. So everything in our environment, even if seemingly dull matter, is part of the universal body. And as Prabhupada says here, he's in everything, he's in the atoms. So, of course, like I'm sitting on a chair right now. So this chair is not alive in the sense of it being a separate soul. As I am, it's not alive in that sense, but it's full of life in the sense that it's full of the consciousness of the Supreme. And the example can be given just like the cells in my body are alive, but there are some parts of my body that are not alive, and yet I am aware of them. That is particularly my fingernails and my hair. So my fingernails and my hair, they're not alive. They're dead matter, but I still have an awareness of them. You know, my hair right now is up in a bun, and I can feel, I have some awareness of where my hair is, even though that hair that's in a bun doesn't have consciousness through it exactly. It's not a living being. So the Lord, as the super soul of the universe, he is aware. I mean, just think about it right now. Think about all the matter that one sees around one. If you look around your environment right now, whatever unconscious matter is there. Huh? Well, because there is oneness, because the Lord is not divided. The Lord is conscious of that matter. The matter is not exactly conscious of itself. You know, my skin cell, my living skin cell, my living stomach cell is aware of itself. Whereas my fingernails that are going beyond my finger, they're not aware of themselves, but I am aware of them. So my chair is not aware of itself, but Krishna is aware of the chair. He is aware of where the chair is situated. He is aware of what it's being used for. He is aware of everything. Everything is sacred. It was some book, I never read it, but I remember seeing the title, something like Acting as If the Sacred in Everything Matters, something like that. So everything is sacred. Everything. There's nothing profane. The only things that are profane is when we see some separateness from the whole. Right? Like if you cut the hair from my head and it's on the floor, it becomes disgusting. Or you cut my nails, you see some, you know, nails lying on the floor. But the hair on my head can be, of course, my hair's not particularly attractive, but anyway, the hair on your head can be very attractive. People spend a lot of time and money to make their hair look attractive, and it's definitely one of the more attractive features of the human body is the hair. And people spend a lot of money making their nails attractive. So this whole material world is very attractive, genuinely, for the devotee, when seen in relationship to Krishna. When seen in relationship to Krishna. So those who want to see the world as simply separate from the Lord, they look at the world and they see, oh, there's just some disgusting hair, some disgusting nails. Ugh, why would we be interested in that? And that may be useful for a neophyte. But the advanced devotee, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochaneva Santasadaiva Hridaye Shivilokayanti Yamshama Sundaram Achincha Gunasvaram, the advanced devotee, oh, that's the hair of God. That's the nails of God. That's the back of God. This is what is part of God. Let me become attracted not to it, but to the person who is aware of it and who is part of it. So again, Vishnu Chakvari Thakur says this verse gives us five ways in which we can know the Lord even without transcendent realization. That is, that he's shining in the temporary world as the Antaryami. He's the Lord of all causes. He reveals the effects. He's full in all effects and causes. And he's the non-dual one. When we work on the basis of this Shastric knowledge, when we make an effort, sadhana means we're making an effort. When we make an effort to work on the basis of this knowledge, then the Lord is pleased with us. He says, oh, here's someone trying to know me in the way that I have detailed that they should know me. And in his pleasure with us, he then reveals to us. So then we get revelation, not only of these points here, but we get revelation of the beautiful form of Nanda Nandana, Yasoda Nandana, Gopikanta, Bhaktivatsala. We get a vision of the beautiful Krishna, two-handed, playing his flute, running barefoot through the forests of Vrindavan, taking care of his cows and feeding the monkeys, stealing the gopis' butter, and dancing with the young gopis and playing with his friends and so forth. We get a revelation of the ultimate form of Bhagavan far beyond any concept of this one small, insignificant universe. So I'm not sure if we're able to unmute people for questions. Here then, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.